Hey, my name's Zenu, and you're listening to Anti-Moonboy News. It was a crazy week, maybe among the craziest weeks in Monero's history. And in this episode, we're going to be giving you the day-to-day breakdown of what went down with the reorg attack or the selfish mining attack that had occurred. We'll be breaking down all the marketing that's been going on and the FUD that's being thrown around that has been spammed essentially on social media. And we're going to be talking about the future of Monero and the mitigations being proposed. There was a very contentious meeting at the Monero Research Lab that happened this week. And so we're going to be looking at what's being proposed and what to expect. So lots of stuff to talk about today. And I am pretty pumped up. I mean, this is some exciting stuff, guys. You know, it kind of came out of nowhere as we haven't really been taking Cubic too seriously, but they have been gaining more and more hash rate. And last Monday, things really took a turn because they decided to start attempting reorgs and they were successful. They were able to get a 7-block reorg as well as a couple sixes. And in fact, yesterday, they were able to accomplish an 8-block reorg. So we're going to be talking about that and how they were able to do that and much more. But before we get to that, we have a lot of super chats to get to. As always, you can go to xmrchat.com/Zenu. You can donate. And yeah, starting things off, we have a donation from Canary in the Cage Podcast. They donate 0.1 XMR. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate that. And they say, keep up the good work. We give away XMR in every episode. Come get some. Well, there you have it. If you want to check out their podcast, I recommend it. I know one of the guys. One of the guys is Snex, who has donated to the show. He's a bit of a degenerate, though, so I'd be careful around him. But they have a podcast. I think they talk a lot of like politics and stuff, but they also talk about Monero. So apparently for each episode, they have some sort of raffle with Monero. So if you want to participate in that, you can check out their podcast, and I'm sure you'll find out more information. But thank you so much for that donation. I really appreciate it. Next up, we got a donation from Kendi, who sends 0.01 XMR. And they say, considering that Monero has been attacked multiple times in the past few years, and also a possible serious one right now, is it wrong to say that we should also recommend other privacy coins to maximize people's freedom and privacy at all times? Well, that's a great question. Thank you, Kendi. So I definitely don't think it's wrong to look at other projects. My only issue with what you're saying is, well, the usage of the phrase privacy coin, I'm very much against that. I view Monero as a cryptocurrency, just like I view Bitcoin as a cryptocurrency, because you know, it's really the sum of all of its parts. And all too often in cryptocurrency, you have projects that are being marketed. And I find that a lot of privacy coins, they're using privacy as a marketing gimmick. And that's just a major red flag for me. I'm of the opinion that if there's a well-rounded project, it will have a privacy community embedded in it. And so, for example, like the second largest privacy community in cryptocurrency is involved with Bitcoin. There's a ton of like OG cypherpunks who still use Bitcoin, who still build on it. And I mean, yeah, I would recommend looking and researching Bitcoin, you know, privacy like tools and stuff, just because it's relevant. You know, I definitely prefer Monero and I really only recommend Monero, but like if Monero didn't exist, I would probably be like using Bitcoin mostly. In fact, I've been talking about the Ashigaru stuff recently. So yeah, like looking at a lot of these projects though, like a lot of it is just very amateurish in my opinion. You know, we had with Xano recently, the whole debacle with their network security, just not that great in my opinion. You know, Zcash, I have a lot of philosophical issues with them, amongst other things. I think they have like really well like made privacy like technology. I can't argue with that. But, you know, again, I'm looking at kind of the sum of all the parts. And with a project like that, their culture that's very pro-compliance and that's like okay with working with regulators is just a huge red flag for me, among other things. So it's just hard for me to kind of like give a recommendation on something just because it has privacy. It needs to have like a well-rounded base. And in my opinion, Monero does a really good job with having that well-rounded base. But like, I absolutely like looking at other projects. And I mean, if you find something interesting, that's great. You know, I don't really know much about Tornado Cash, for example, but I've heard like, you know, good things about how it was created. And I mean, I just covered the shit out of it for the past, you know, month or so. And there's a lot of really good things to say about it. So, you know, if I were to use Ethereum and I needed privacy, I probably would use Tornado Cash, for example. But, you know, in a lot of cases, though, with like a lot of these privacy coins, it's just a very small community. And again, there's just that aspect of moonboyism that kind of overrides a lot of its legitimacy. And to kind of get over that hump, you just need more adoption. And that's really difficult to get. So I don't know, maybe DarkFi is another example of a project that I have talked about on my channel. I did a video review on Dark IRC. So I am like monitoring that project as well. So maybe check out that one, I guess. But they don't even really have a working product yet. It's mostly on testnet right now. So it's one of those things where you kind of just have to keep your ear to the ground. But generally speaking, the reason I just cover Monero is just because it's better than all the other cryptocurrencies. So that's pretty much that. So good question, though. Thank you very much, Kendi. Next up, we got Leo, who donates 0.1 XMR. Thanks, Leo. Appreciate that. And he says, check out this link. It is on the creep of UN SDGs into open source. Also, Matrix is mentioned. Over the years, I've seen Linux Foundation descend into SDG narratives. Scary. Keep up the good work, brother. Thank you very much, Leo, as always. And yeah, it was a good link and it was a good read. It was a article written by Lunduke, who has become very popular over the past, really past year. I've been seeing this guy everywhere. And yeah, it's just a kind of a typical Lunduke article. He writes about this stuff all the time, where you're kind of having this slow creep of, how do I word this? Kind of like equality, diversity, inclusion stuff. And that's kind of seeping into a lot of open source communities. And there's a pushback on one side because a lot of this stuff prevents a lot of free speech in certain areas. And then there's inner conflicts. And, you know, the thing is, like, you can't avoid politics. And unfortunately, in open source communities, it's just inevitable that you're going to have friction. I mean, we saw recently with Linux where, you know, they were just getting rid of or they were revoking the authority of people who are just based in Russia. Like, they literally, they were contributors to the Linux project. They're doing all these different things. And well, just because they're based in Russia, they're cutting them out. You know, I find that to be highly questionable, you know, just based on what exactly. So there's things like that, which are, you know, highly questionable. And so anyways, in this article, they're talking about there was this this push that the UN is doing with these different initiatives, and some different open source projects kind of co-signed it. And then they had some closed doors meetings, as Lunduke puts it. Now, I don't really know. I think this is kind of reading a little too much into it. Like, I don't really think the UN has much authority on like freaking anything. They're pretty much useless as a body, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I mean, we have genocide openly happening right now in the Middle East, and they're kind of just twiddling their fingers. So I don't know what the UN actually does. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that there are different, you know, pushes for, you know, very pro inclusion kind of things into different communities. We've seen this a lot with like Western governments, and I'm not surprised. And they're probably doing this to gain favor and then get investments from a lot of these bigger companies. You know, in the article, they mentioned how Google basically owns Firefox, for example. And yeah, this is the case where like a lot of open source projects, like they get their funding from, you know, these like massive, you know, corporations, and they're going to just do what they say because it's their paycheck. And there's been a lot of controversy too with Linux and Red Hat Enterprises and kind of the direction they're going in. And yeah, I mean, if you really dig around for this, there's a lot to read, and Lunduke has been covering it. I find it kind of funny though, because Lunduke is a Zionist, which I only found out recently, and it's kind of like it, and that to me is just kind of surprising. But you know, it's like he can dish it out, but he can't take it, you know, because he gets very offended on the social media. And furthermore, he kind of does some clickbaity things too. I understand, like, there's not a lot of people covering this, so it's his niche he falls into. But yeah, sometimes it kind of comes across as clickbaity. And here, I think this is a little clickbaity, but this is absolutely a problem though. Like, you know, kind of the ownership, the implied ownership of open source projects, you know, by these, you know, massive companies, it is a problem, and it's probably going to get worse over time. So anyway, really, really interesting article though. So I appreciate that, Leo. Next up, we got a donation from Freedom Quester. He gives 0.2057 XMR. Thank you so much for that, man. I appreciate it. And he says, "Hi, Xenu. Sorry I haven't donated in a while. You've described yourself as a crypto anarchist many times. Is that the same as anarcho-capitalism, except for crypto instead of fiat, or are there other differences? Hope the question isn't too political." Well, again, thank you, Freedom Quester, for that massive donation. And I guess anarcho-capitalism, that's more of like very much like a political ideology. You know, that we talked about Rothbard last week, so I would recommend checking out Anatomy of the State, because that's basically the foundation of anarcho-capitalism. It's kind of like, I don't know if you're American, it's like the libertarian movement, kind of just like recognizing that the state is way too large and people are dependent on the state, and the state grows all the time. And for what it's worth, there's definitely an overlap with this and the like open source communities in general. I mean, if you go on like cryptocurrency Twitter, a lot of it is very much like libertarian kind of like vibe. You kind of get that a lot. You know, the pork fest type of, you know, the type of person who goes to pork fest like every year, like that. You find that a lot in crypto Twitter. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying, like, it's very common. Now, as for myself, yeah, I call myself a crypto anarchist because it is different. Because it's kind of like, I'm of the opinion that the state is inevitable, and regardless of like which side wins, it's probably not going to be good. There's just like too many people and there's too much corruption, and it's very frustrating to like live in that kind of system. You kind of have to just play the game, essentially, is what I figured out. And what's really cool about cryptography, and what's really cool about crypto anarchism, is that essentially you can play by the rules, but using free and open source software, you can fight back. And it's totally legal. Like it's not like it's a form of protest that is actually doing something. It's protecting you, and it can protect your friends and family if you teach them. And it just feels good because you're fighting back against Dragnet surveillance, right? And you're fighting back against like data collection, and you're learning about computers along the way. And yeah, along the way, you meet a bunch of other like-minded people. And it's just a vibe that I immediately clicked with because it was kind of like exactly what I was looking for. Because I mean, you know, voting for the president who's supposedly going to end a war and who ends up just not doing that, it gets old after like two elections, right? I figured this out by the time I was like 20. I'm like, okay, this sucks. Right? But it's like that pretty much everywhere. And it's not that I think that there's no, like, I'm not like black pill necessarily. I actually view it in the opposite way. I kind of view it as very, very much like a white pill, because it's kind of like, it is an actually like a legitimate type of thing that you can do that has an impact, and you feel good doing it. So there's really no like book I can point to about crypto anarchism. I guess it would be like, you know, of course there is the Crypto Anarchist Manifesto, and there's the Cypherpunk Manifesto, and you know, both of those are very similar. And both of those are kind of like tell the story about how privacy is necessary for an open society in the electronic age, right? That kind of like, we need this. And so I guess like crypto anarchism, another way to look at it is just being a cypherpunk is another way of thinking of it, where it's like you're spending your time hardening your privacy, hardening your OPSEC in this world that's becoming increasingly dependent on technology and the internet and all of those things like that. And so again, it's just the best way to fight back, because you're really an outlier in this case. Because of course most people aren't even really thinking about this. So yeah, it doesn't really have much to do necessarily with cryptocurrency. Although that does absolutely play a role into it. I mean, it's like cryptocurrency is something that we've discovered, or I guess I should say peer-to-peer cash is something that we've discovered. So yeah, it definitely plays a role into what a crypto anarchist would support. But like for example, I would also recommend like learning about like precious metals and stuff, you know? So like it's one of those things where we're examining our tools, right? We're just like figuring out what tools are necessary in this modern age. And obviously there's a lot to learn and everything, but the worst thing that you can do from the perspective that I have is to just completely be okay with surveillance, completely be okay with data collection, not care at all about proprietary software. If that is your mindset, then I don't understand. Like, I can't. It's just like we're not on the same wavelength is really what it is. So did that answer your question? I don't know. Hopefully it did. But thank you very much, Freedom Quester. That was a good one. Next up, we got another donation from Leo. He gives 0.02 XMR. Thank you again, Leo. And he says, seen Riot's article on the 51% attack. Alex Anarcho tweeted this. Yeah, so the whole, I did not read this article, but like, yeah, this whole thing with this 51% attack, I mean, I'm going to talk about it again later. I can talk about it now. Fuck it, it's my show. yeah, that whole thing was just a complete media blitz mixed with like propaganda. You know, like within like 4 to 12 hours, everybody was convinced Monero was like dead and 51% attacked, like everybody. And it was like crazy. And that's the thing about this Cubic like project. This is like all social manipulation. And they have this army of brain dead retards. Okay. These people are freaking losers. They're all moon boys. They don't understand anything. So they're looking at this guy CFB as like, he's as if he's some savant, which honestly, he is pretty smart. I'll give him that much. Like, the guy is very intelligent. This attack is like actually pretty brilliant. Like, anyways, they're looking at this guy and they're worshiping like literally every word he's saying. And he can just sick the these followers on different people. Like, he did it to me. Like, the other day, I forget exactly what happened. I think I like tweeted something, and then he either quote tweeted it or he responded to me. I forget what he did. But like, because he did that, I was just like nailed with like 30 different cubic people saying just the dumbest things at me. I'm just like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? But his like army, they're all in Discord and they're all just like retweeting and tweeting everything. And we just don't have that retard energy in Monero. We just don't. We have autism energy. That's true. We have like very smart people working on the project. But man, that Moonboy stuff is just, it's crazy, man. So anyway, they went overboard with this whole, well, we took over the network, which they didn't. Anyways, all the exchanges took the bait. Like, different major accounts for Monero took the bait. And it was like implied that they did actually successfully 51% the network. So yeah, the whole thing was mental. Now, to be clear, what they did was bad. And we're going to talk a lot about this in this episode. It was not good what happened. But they did not 51% the Monero network. They were selfish mining. And I mean, their goal would be to 51% attack the network, but they were selfish mining. And the selfish mining was did cause several reworks, and that was not good. And but they did not 51% attack. Or I guess like you could say they were doing a 51% attack, but without 51% of the network. So it's more like the better way of saying it is they were doing a selfish mining attack. That is literally what they were doing. They were following this this strategy that was already written about many, many years ago by, I forget his name. I don't know other instances of this happening, to be honest, at least off the top of my head, but it has happened now to Monero. And yeah, the reaction was pretty negative. Understandably, you know, price took a hit and all that. And we now have had this pushback, though, of articles like this one, as well as on Twitter. There was the community note that was put in place for freaking, what was it, CoinDesk? You know, CoinDesk had a whole article of FUD, or was it Cointel or Cointelegraph or Cointelegraph, you know? They had a freaking, you know, propaganda piece about Monero dying. Whatever. Let them say it. Because really what is happening is that they're just giving Monero attention. And when Monero inevitably survives this, well, it's just another example of Monero surviving. Sound familiar? Sounds like all the Bitcoin's going to die this time, for real. You know, sounds exactly like that. Because it really is. So anyways, yeah, I didn't actually read that article, kind of skimmed it, but yeah, I'm totally with them on that one. Next up, we got a donation from Alex Anarco, who was mentioned in the last message. He donates 0.01 XMR. Donkey. That's how you say thank you, right? Donkey. And he says, currently leaning towards the historical data solution for the 51% issue. Fairly low complexity with an incentive to solo/P2Pool mine. Finality later sounds tempting, but I don't understand it enough yet. This complexity is a downside, in my opinion. Rock on. Well, thanks again, Alex. So yeah, the historical data, are you referring to Tevador's proposal? I think you are. Because yeah, basically what Tevador's proposal does is it essentially makes you essentially need to run a node. And the reason that is the case is because you have to like provide like a proof of like something that would require you to download the entire node. It's like something within the history of the blockchain, and it's randomly generated. So you have to basically just have a copy of the blockchain, and that's a requirement to then mine. I don't know if I'm on board with this one. And the issue I have with this one is it would cause a shock to the mining network. One. Two, I think this would be gameable. I might be wrong about that, but I think it might be gameable. And yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not completely sold on it. From what I've read though, like we do need to incentivize P2 pool. P2 pool adoption is like freaking terrible. It's really like that is probably should be our number one focus is figuring out how to get more people to use P2 pool. So from that perspective, then yeah, maybe we should be doing that. But the issue I have with this though is the smaller kind of hobby miner who doesn't want to download the blockchain. Well, now he has to, and I'm not so sure if that's a good thing. And I don't know. This would probably prevent botnets, I would assume. And I don't know if that's a good thing either, because botnets do provide security. I mean, I'm not supporting or endorsing botnets. I'm just saying, like, it's not a bad thing that they're mining Monero. Okay, it's a bad thing that they're stealing energy, but, like, you know what I mean, okay? But, yeah, I think that this could have, like, negative effects that I think would outweigh the positive. So I'm not sure about this one. It's an interesting proposal though, and I agree that we do need to boost P2 pool, and this would encourage people to do that, because if you download the blockchain, well, then you could just mine using P2 pool. And it's one of those things where it's just like we need more people doing that, so maybe it is a good idea. So anyway, thanks again, Alex and Arco. Next up, again, Leo, third time. Damn, Leo. You know what? I got to get a custom sound effect for you. We'll get the air horns for big donations. Maybe I'll have like a Leo sound effect. Anyway, he donates 0.02 XMR. Thank you again. And he says, what if Ivan Chiglo is a compromised asset, knowingly or unknowingly, and his cubic story is merely a way of state actors to try and destroy Monero without having to openly confront it? The timing of Majestic Bank, Tradeogre, Cubic is quite remarkable. Yeah, it is. I can't argue with that. It's very peculiar. All kind of happening at once. And you also didn't mention the fact that, you know, you had exchanges all jump on the story and, block, deposits and shit like that. Very weird that kind of all happened at once. The thing about this, though, is he is based in Belarus. That's pretty well known, or at least it's established. So I don't think that would be the case, just because they're kind of antagonistic with the United States, because they're pro-Russia. So I'm not so sure. But at the same time, it is convenient where, you know, maybe they are just kind of giving them hash rate. I mean, that's the craziest thing about this whole Cubic situation, is that they just somehow started getting a shitload of hash rate. I mean, it's really expanding greatly. And it's to the point where maybe they already had access to this hash rate and they've just been kind of playing dumb. It's honestly entirely possible, because it's kind of shocking how much they accelerated. You know, on Thursday, they were mining at like almost 3 gigahash, and that looked legitimate to me. So I don't know if they actually have that much hash rate. Like, they can definitely cause some damage, and that's kind of what we're looking at now. Like, where did this come from? So it's entirely possible that they either have a botnet or they're getting help from someone who has control of a lot of computing power. It is very odd though, because like for the longest time, I mean, we've been watching them. It looks like they really hadn't had anything. Now on Tuesday, or excuse me, on Monday, last Monday, you know, they started showing like, oh, okay, maybe these guys are for real. But like it was nothing bad, right? But then on Thursday, it was like, whoa, okay, they got a fuckload of hash right now. 3 gigahash? And that was legitimate, too. I mean, they were solving a ton of blocks that day. So, I mean, you have to imagine they probably had 40% of the network. So, anyway, to answer your question, though, it's a remarkable coincidence. I agree with you on that. Is he a compromised asset, though? I don't know if I can go that far. I'm not sure. It could be a situation where, like, the people who don't like Monero are looking at this as an opportunity to pile on. You know what I mean? It could just be as simple as that. Because it is just possible that, like, the hash rate is just easy to acquire. And so, you know, they acquired the hash rate, you know, financially probably. And, you know, they have this all purchased. They're spending a ton of money, but they can afford it. And in doing so, they're getting positive returns for Cubic. And yeah, maybe that's just how they're playing this. But I'm not sure though. So anyway, thanks again, Leo, for that donation. And lastly, this one is from FD. He donates 0.015 XMR. Thank you very much. And he says, can you give your take on time-based methods to make selfish mining more difficult? And he gave two links for examples. Yeah, so this one was not mentioned during the Monero Research Lab meeting, but Body Anarchist, he brought this up, I think, on Twitter. I don't know where he heard this from, but it seems like a cool idea, basically, making it harder to do a reorg because you're weighing the time of the block as part of the formula as well, and not just on the hash rate, something like that. It honestly sounds like a good idea to me. I don't really have anything against it. So I think he's looking into that more, and other people in the Monero Research Lab are thinking about it. And I think it's just another idea we can kind of put into the idea pile. I don't know. Like, yeah, the idea pile. Okay, we're just throwing ideas out, which that's really what's happening right now. We really are just getting a bunch of good ideas and kind of mushing them together, and that's going to be the response I think that we're going to have. So we're going to talk more on the Cubic stuff later. We already talked a lot, but we got more to talk about. But now let us pivot. Thanks again for all the donations, guys. And if you do want to donate, xmrchat.com/Xenu. But yeah, let's do some channel updates, and then we're going to go all in on Cubic, probably for the rest of the show. I don't think we're going to really be doing much news this week because we got to talk all on Cubic. So yeah, channel updates. The Matrix channel has been created. Okay. Now, I'm not tweeting this out, so if you made it this far in this episode, thank you very much. But I've made a Matrix chat room, and to access it, you can go to antimoonboy.com/secret-room. Okay. antimoonboy.com/secret-room. I will have a secret invite link there. Don't share it. Okay. Do not share this link. You can then join the room that way. Now, I am using Matrix. This might only be temporary. I don't know, but I already do use Matrix, and I like it because it has compatibility with IRC, and I like to browse the Monero IRC chats. So this isn't like the most super private thing ever. It's Matrix. Okay. So, this is, really though, it's just a fun opportunity to kind of just hang out. You know, keep the power levels low, guys. Okay. Let's keep just a nice welcoming atmosphere. You know, basically just to hang out. I'll post links to shit I'm making in there. So you guys can find my material that way. Or if you're just hanging out, you can chat with other people who like my show. It'll be a good time. At least that's the idea. If this idea fails, then screw it. Then we'll just cancel the chat, I guess. But we're going to try this out. So check out the my website, antimoonboy.com/secret-room. You'll find a link there, and you can come hang out. I also need some Jannies, so if you want to be a Janny, let me know. regarding videos on the channel. Yeah, I didn't make the Rito swap video. This week, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make the Rito swap video again. I will, though, make a video about how to use a coin swap service, which is kind of relevant now because people can't really buy Monero on Kraken. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a video of like how to coin swap into Monero. Super freaking easy. It's going to take me like, you know, an hour to make. But I think it would be like really nice to have a video like that with me kind of explaining what is a coin swap. And again, because this is user friendly, I will be mentioning like, you know, KYC exchanges and like, okay, you shouldn't be using this, but if you are, you can swap into Monero. So I'm kind of like, I'm doing this for the user friendliness. It's not completely anti-Moonboy approved because we don't like KYC, but the people want it, so I got to do it. Yeah, so I'm probably going to make a video on that as well this week. And yeah, I will say, you know, making these user-friendly videos is really having an impact on my channel growth. I don't know what I'm at right now, but I was at like 890 yesterday for subscribers. So like I've been growing quite a bit lately, and I actually might be able to hit 1000 by the 1 year anniversary of my channel, which is in October. So we're going to be cutting it close, but getting a 1000 in my first year would be pretty cool. So, of course, subscribe if you haven't yet. I'm also on Odyssey and Rumble and all that. And, yeah, if you want to give to the channel but also get something in return, I got merch. You can go to antimoonboy.com/merch. And I got two t-shirts there, two different designs. You can check those out. And, yeah, they're really nice. I'm actually wearing one right now. So there we go. Okay, now let's get to the Cubic stuff, which is the main story of the week. All right, so Cubic Mania, let's tackle this one. I'm going to go through a beat by beat of what went on over the past like 10 days. So about, man, this seems like forever ago. It was following a Thursday. So it wasn't last Thursday, it was the Thursday before. It was Friday at work, and the Cubic stuff was starting to heat up. It was still not that big of a deal, but like it was starting to get talked about more. There's some more concern. And in actual fact, Doug had messaged me to be on Monerotopia for that Saturday. And it was actually hilarious because he had messaged me, you know, asking like, hey, can you come on Monerotopia for Saturday? And I was like, well, I'm kind of busy right now. I have like things I'm doing. Let me get back to you in like 6 hours. And Doug's like, oh, sure, no problem. So 6 hours go by and I'm not able to get Saturday off. So I messaged Doug and I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry to make you wait, but I can't make it on Saturday. Doug's like, oh, no big deal. And I said, well, let's do a Monero talk next week, maybe Tuesday. And Doug said, sure. And that's what we did. We ended up doing a Monero talk the following Tuesday. But what's hilarious though, is I swear to God, like, not even an hour after we had that conversation, Doug turns around and he books Luke Parker for Monerotopia, which I thought was hilarious. As if to say that, you know, Luke had offered to come on the show and Doug was like, no, Luke, we got the anti-moon boy possibly coming in. We got Xenu the anti-moon boy. Yeah, we know you made full chain membership proofs, Luke, but we got Xenu here. I doubt that's what actually happened, but, it was pretty funny though, because, obviously I would much rather have Luke go on in that circumstance because he, you know, has his ear to the ground. And at this point there wasn't really much discussions happening. And also the other thing contextually was that he had been the one who made the GitHub about, hardening the, you know, network security, you know, with RandomX now starting to kind of have some issues and people were concerned. So anyway, that happened on Saturday. I thought Luke was pretty great on Monero Talk, or excuse me, Monerotopia. It's worth listening to. And then, you know, things were kind of good. I did a podcast last week that came out really great. And then shit hit the fan on Monday. Yeah, I mean, I was basically going to bed and then I got an alert basically telling me that there was a 7-block reorg, and there were a couple 6-block reorgs as well, and everyone went crazy. Now, in all fairness, this whole cubic thing pretty much immediately flipped from being annoying to, okay, this is actually a problem. Which, you know, I'd kind of been growing to, you know, accept that this was a problem. But that was a switch where it was like, oh, they're actually starting to attack the network. And a 7-block reorg is actually pretty impressive. So it was pretty much automatic overnight. Like, not only did Monero dump more, but then you had exchanges preventing people from withdrawing Monero. And it was just a lot of chaos, a lot of FUD being thrown around. Cubic was claiming they 51% attacked Monero, which they did not. They were just accomplishing selfish mining. And everyone ran with it, though. And it included not only the absolute crap crypto media, which is just awful, but it also included just a lot of people who had been waiting to, like, punch at Monero, you know, who they wanted to just, like, rub Monero's face in the dirt, or anyone who supports Monero. This was their chance, which is fair. You know, we kind of deserve it at this point. We've been winning a little too much, right? So that happened. And everyone came out of the woodwork to kind of dab on Monero, which is fine. Because we deserved it. We've definitely got caught here. And it was kind of embarrassing. So anyways, literally the next day, I go on Monero Talk with Doug. And I thought we had a fantastic conversation. Probably one of the best interviews I've done. And we talked for... yeah, a good hour about all Cubic. And I think pretty much everything that I was saying was spot on. I'm pretty happy with how it came out. You know, kind of just emphasizing, like, listen, you need to start mining. Everyone needs to start throwing hash rate at this thing. This is how we're going to improve, kind of a situation. So yeah, all that craziness was happening. And it was pretty much quickly figured out, though, that this was not a 51% attack, but it was a selfish mining attack that was successful. And the crazy statistic that was now known to us from Arachnium, I talked about this on Doug's podcast, was that if you have 30% of the hash rate and you are actively trying for a reorg, a 7-block reorg, you can get a 7-block reorg 50% of the time within 3.5 hours, which is a crazy statistic. But that kind of just shows you how important miner decentralization is. 30% of the hash rate. So that's not even close to 50%. But with 30%, you can actually get a 7-block reorg 50% of the time within 3.5 hours if you're constantly trying for it. And we're kind of supposing, and I guess we're kind of assuming that this is what Cubic was doing because they were trying to get, like, attention and trying to get headlines, which they did get. And furthermore, they definitely have a lot more hash rate than they were letting on. They clearly had a lot of hash rate because they were doing a bunch of different reorgs and they were just getting a lot of blocks. And so, yeah, the whole thing was actually quite concerning. It was pretty shocking. But again, just like we talked about earlier in the show, it wasn't a 51% attack. The media, though, ran with it, and that kind of got us into the situation where for a couple of days where everyone's kind of yelling at each other, and it was a bad scene. On Wednesday, the Monero Research Lab had a meeting, very contentious meeting. I mean, it wasn't like horrible or anything, but like clearly there's like sides being taken in the situation where some people are very passionately just for proof of work, and I'm on that camp, and then others really are pushing this proof of stake, and you know, I find that totally fine. Like, we can have debates, but some people on the proof of work side are taking this very much not okay with that. So yeah, regarding the two camps, obviously you have the proof of work camp and the proof-of-stake camp, with the proof-of-work camp being, you know, much larger, you know, considering this is Monero, and that's the camp I'm in. And so anyways, I do encourage people to check out the chat, just because this is going to be a developing situation over the next couple months, especially as people are starting to kind of learn more about what we can do and et cetera. But you know, really the kind of the gist here is like we can one make do with what we have, which is what we are going to do with various mitigations and, you know, things that we can do in the short term. And then there's hardening for the long term. And that's the interesting part, because there's actually a lot of different things that can be done here and a lot of different routes that can be taken. And in some of the proposals that are being pushed are actually pretty radical too. So then Thursday came along and I mean, they mined pretty hard. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but like they definitely had a big hash rate. They didn't selfish mine though. And you know, we got through it. I mean, it wasn't a perfect day. They clearly were mining a lot. I think they showed like a 3 gigahash rate, which seemed fake, but they were solving a lot of blocks. So afterwards, the general, you know, kind of vibe was that they probably had like 40% of the hash rate, which is like concerning. And now I'm like, damn, like this is accelerating. Like, I don't know how this is happening. That's why earlier today when someone mentioned like maybe it's a state actor, I mean, maybe it was. I don't know. This whole situation is weird. I mean, the simplest answer is that they were kind of just going all in at this point, and they probably have some relationships with different mining rig owners, and they kind of just threw everything all at the same day. I'm not really sure, but they didn't selfish mine though. And so we pretty much got through Thursday and we're still fine. But yeah, going into Saturday, and now I'm like kind of getting worried myself. And Saturday came and, you know, nothing really happened. At this point, the tides are starting to shift. Now, they did have a 8-block reorg. I think they had a 7-block reorg as well. They had one big reorg. So I think they did have an 8. But, like, they didn't really do much else. They didn't really solve as many blocks as they had been letting on. It was really only one period where they had that, like, kind of big push. But other than that, relatively average day. All right, so Doug actually has a really good write-up that he put on Twitter. Well, someone else wrote it for him. I'd be impressed if Doug wrote this, because it's a really good summary of a lot of the different ideas being proposed. But this is a really great thread that Doug did post. So we're kind of just go through these. I'm going to kind of touch on a lot of the different ideas being proposed for hardening the network security. The first one, and this is probably going to happen, is DNS checkpointing. And basically, this is a centralized solution, so that's the downside. But on the positive side, it would help prevent reorgs. Essentially, we would have a centralized website kind of confirming blocks, is kind of how I like to think of it. So basically all nodes would entrust Monero Pulse to provide the appropriate Monero information. And there could be a network split, but we would just, or a fork, but we would just trust the one that is supported and ignore the other one. That's kind of the gist of it. This is being tested right now, and the testing is going really well from what I hear. So I know it is centralized, but we've done things like this in the past. And the way I look at it is, do you trust the Monero Research Lab? If you do, you should support this, because this is something that they're handling and we do trust them a lot anyways. So not ideal, but as a short-term band-aid, this is actually pretty great in my opinion. And I think it's something that we should do. Now, another thing we can do is rent hash rate, and that's literally exactly what I've been doing for the past day now. I created the Monero Defense Fund. And yeah, I'm going to talk more about this next week, because I'm still kind of in the thick of it right now. I'm recording this on Monday. And yeah, long story short, it's pretty chaotic right now. But basically, a lot of people donated to this donation leak I had for doing hash rate. I was expecting like one Monero to be donated, and I got like 22. I don't know why so many people were giving me money. I was like, holy shit. It started giving me like really bad anxiety too, because like I'm like being trusted with all this stuff. And anyways, but renting Hashrate, in all seriousness, is a strategy that we have. And so, as a short-term band-aid, absolutely. Another thing that we could do is merge mine with a larger network. There, I highly doubt this is going to happen. You know, I think a weaker option, just because we hold ourselves to a higher standard, essentially. And yeah, this would be seen as weak from a lot of people. So I don't see that as happening. And then increasing fees. Now, I was very supportive of this, but now I'm not so sure, because Arctic Mine is against this, and Arctic Mine handles a lot of the dynamic fees or fees in general, and dynamic blocks and tail emission. So honestly, just by virtue of him, you know, not being supportive of this, it kind of throws me off. I would want to ask him why, though, because I would imagine that like having more something be more profitable for miners would be a good thing, because we're trying to attract more miners. Seems like a no-brainer to me, but evidently he was against it. I don't know if he went into more detail on Monerotopia this past weekend. It was like a fucking 8-hour episode. I'm telling you, like, I don't know. These Monerotopias, man, they get longer and longer. I'm surprised Doug hasn't done like a 24-hour Monerotopia yet. Like, that's totally something I would imagine he would do. Anyways, in like hour 6 or 7, Arctic Mine was talking about, you know, fees, and I don't remember what he said. So anyways, he doesn't support it though. So I find that to be interesting, but because this is something I did approve of. So we'll see. Another thing, longer term options, the Tevador proposal. We kind of already talked about this, but basically you would need to run a node if you're going to mine. I'm not really sold on this one, because, again, I already talked about this, but like, I don't really think it solves the issue, and I think it would kind of hurt the mining, or the size of the mining network. So, yeah. There's also a block signing proposal. This was talked about during that Monerotopia. I'm not really sure if this would have any impact, but basically miners, they would sign blocks, they mine and earn 1% of the mining reward for that block. This would result in pools earning less direct profit, but it's effectively a mini lottery for the miner who does solve the block. So I don't really know what the point of this is, in terms of it like actually having that much of an impact. I guess it would be a small impact, but that is something that they're talking about. An ASIC-friendly algorithm is proposed. I think this is a fallback, if anything. I don't see it happening. There's also talk of having different algorithms, you know, maybe a GPU one as well as an ASIC one. Possible. I'm actually more in favor of that than just having an ASIC, kind of like what Tari's doing. But to be honest, I'm just more in favor of RandomX. And the way I look at it, like, if we can just get like a handful of different ideas, like we talked about earlier with Body's idea, have that, mix that maybe with some higher fees, you know, mix that with maybe Tevador's proposal, and, you know, organize a hash rate committee that buys hash rate in times of need. And with DNS checkpointing, I think we have like all these things. I think we would immediately harden RandomX. Well, maybe not the transaction fees again, but I think all those other things are like very easily doable, and it would have an impact. Now, on the controversial side, we have this thing of the finality layer being proposed by Luke. Yeah, I don't know about this one. First off, if you're introducing something like that, you're immediately going to screw around with the block reward, and we're definitely not going to create more Monero. We're not going to have inflation. So instead, you're going to have a lower block reward for miners, I guess, which I don't know. I don't know if that's a good idea necessarily. It throws a wrench into a lot of things. That's ignoring like things I don't like about proof of stake anyway. You know, I view it as centralizing, and to give their side credit, it is true that Monero has had a fair distribution relative to other cryptocurrencies. So maybe it would work a little better to give them something there. But I just don't really see, like, I view RandomX as just superior anyways. And we're dealing with some growing pains right now because, I didn't mention the other thing, like the price going up. That would be the most ideal thing. We just can't control that. But like that literally would pretty much solve everything, funnily enough. So what I have heard is that, you know, Luke does have support, but there's definitely a lot of researchers and developers who aren't as keen on this. So I really do not think this is going to pass. And definitely, like, the other thing too is like some people want to go like to a full proof of stake, and I do not at all see that happening either. Yeah, I think the most ideal, again, thing that we can do is work with what we have and just harden it. You know, we have RandomX. It does work great. I mean, it's surviving this attack right now. We can just improve that. And so I think that's the most likely thing. Okay, I'm going to have a couple more things and wrap this show up here because it's getting late and I want to try to get this episode out. So yeah, this was a very successful propaganda attack. It was a very social attack. Cubic did or was able to get a lot of hash rate in certain periods of time, but, you know, was it that effective? Well, that's where it's questionable. You know, Cubic was able to get a lot of hash rate really quickly at certain time periods. They weren't able to sustain it though, but they were able to sustain for about almost a week, like a lot of attention, and that did help them pump their price and it did give them a lot of press. And that's exactly what they're looking for. So you got to give these guys credit. They were able to actually pull this off. They were able to get a lot of attention and their cryptocurrency pumped because of it. And I think that's like the roughest thing to deal with here, right? We have to kind of admit that this this project actually did do a lot of, I won't say harm, but it caused a lot of discussion. But that's really the best thing we can do is kind of just acknowledge that and improve, right? So anyways, I got to get going because I'm like running around here. But hopefully I was able to cover the past week relatively well. If you like the content, go to antimoonboy.com for links to, you know, all my different things. And yeah, I'll see you guys next time. Have a good one.